Monique Liguori is joining me right now, Executive Director and Education Director for the Suisun Marsh Natural History Association. We're talking about the wildlife in the region, the caring and nurturing of that wildlife, and to make sure that their lives continue as much uninterrupted as possible as well. Monique Liguori, welcome to Living Today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Likewise, and may I just please tell you, I'm sure as many people tell you so frequently, we love your part of the world.
It's beautiful, isn't it? And it's beautifully rich in wildlife as well.
And I was going to say, we were on our way to Chapelet Vineyards, and a lovely young fox bounded his way right by our vehicle. Of course, we were super extra careful to make sure that he was, of course, safe and sound. But tell us about this region's wonderful presence and appreciation and protection of its wildlife.
We're fortunate here in California. We have a great diversity of wildlife, a number of species, things ranging from elk and deer and bear all the way down to hummingbirds as our smallest examples, I guess.
Oh, next to bees, they're also my favorites as well.
They're wonderful.
Naomi, Chris, and I enjoyed, as Naomi also blogged, about wine and cheese waterside. We looked up into the sky, Monique, and we could swear it was a huge bird, and I guessed it was an eagle.
You may very well have seen a golden eagle. They are in this area. Balds are more rare, but we do have goldens.
Amazing.
At our wildlife center, where we rehabilitate and release wildlife back to the wild, we have a non-releasable golden eagle that people can come and see. So now, you could have seen one.
I've seen large birds nearly everywhere, and I'm sure it's the norm out here, but, you know, like we said, we're from New York. I live in Brooklyn. But so what other kind of, birds? Because there's some that seem like maybe hawks or condors or something like that. And
condor?
I mean, I'm just throwing out names. I don't know if they're local.
No, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
There are a lot of hawks. Golden eagles are the largest. We do have condors, but they're along the coast.
Okay.
And I actually went along the coast in January. We got a new non-releasable coyote for our wildlife center.
Tell us,
and I saw many condors.
What is that experience, first of all, to see a condor in flight?
It's amazing. They're completely different than the turkey vultures are typically what people compare them to, but the turkey vulture, I always say V for vulture, V for victory. They have a shallow V and they tip a lot. Condors are straight out across the wings and they're so stable, there's no tipping at all in flight, and they're enormous.
And Naomi, I think, just showed you a photograph.
Yes.
Was that an eagle?
Yes, that was a condor.
We saw a condor?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was an eagle.
We did see an eagle.
That was an eagle.
This was from that picnic, so you did see the
eagle. You did see the eagle.
So spectacular. We want to have this experience when we come to Napa Valley. The wines are fabulous. The food's incredible. We all here, of course, like Martha Stewart herself, have a passion and a love for preserving nature and wildlife. Tell us where the Natural History Association is located. We can enjoy this.
Well, we're actually in Solano County, which is just south here of Napa County. We have very much the same types of wildlife. We both have extensive marsh areas. Our Suisun Marsh is over 100,000 acres, one of the largest brackish or partly salty wetlands in the United States, and it's part of our San Francisco Bay estuarine system. Napa, the marshes are a bit more freshwater, but all of them have just multitudes of shorebirds, water birds, birds of prey, lots of raccoons, possums, fox like you saw, coyote, many of the different kinds of animals.
We all enjoy wildlife. We enjoy seeing it. But what can we do, say, for example, wherever we live, wherever we encounter ourselves, if we do come upon an injured, a displaced, a distressed wild animal, what should we do?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because that's actually what I've spent almost 30 years of my life now doing. We do wildlife rescue and rehabilitation with the goal of releasing it back to the wild. And our particular group last year had over 70% release rate back to the wild. But the public is really our eyes and ears. They're the ones who bring us or notify us of most of the wildlife that we receive. But something I really like to stress at this time of the year is it sometimes is important to know when not to do something as when to do something.
So, Monique, again, if you have any questions, 866-675-6675, suisunwildlife.org. That's S-U-I-S-U-N, wildlife.org. So when do we and when don't we intervene in nature?
Well, when something appears to be injured, it's usually a good idea to intervene or get the proper authorities. There are wildlife organizations in almost every county in California. We're really among the leaders in this field, which really only started in the 1970s as a grassroots effort because there were no established agencies that dealt with wildlife, and they were coming into more and more conflict with people. When we urge people not necessarily to get involved, but to seek the advice of wildlife rescue people, is if you find, for example, a young jackrabbit, a young fawn. Often people find these animals and they assume they need to be rescued. With deer, the mother will go off for over 24 hours to feed, and it's the fawn's spotted coat, the cami, that protects it.
Okay.
So the worst thing you can do is pick that fawn up and bring it to a rehab center where it has to be cared for by people when mom is usually there somewhere. Mm-hmm. We have actually had people bring them in, had them take them back off 100 yards and watch, and they've seen the mother come back.
To the relief of the mother, the fawn, and everybody involved.
Absolutely, and the rehabilitators, because it's a tremendous amount of work.
Is there a national network, a resource, or somewhere we can call or check out online in order that we do the exact right thing?
There are national network groups of rehabilitators. There's the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. But what I would recommend people do is if you have a wildlife issue that you need to deal with, look for your local resources. Your county people will know who the wildlife rehabilitators are, or if you don't have people in every county, states have their fish and game associations or wildlife associations.
We are visiting right now with Monique Liguori, executive director and education director of the Suisun Marsh Natural History Association. Wildlife rescue is the topic. Questions, if you encountered wildlife where you live, and if you have questions of what to do the next time around, here's your chance to call 866-675-6675. You know, we take courses in continuing education. Aspiring sommeliers, chefs, craftspeople, should we also consider education programs on natural history?
Well, that's another big function of our organization. Wildlife rescue and environmental education tend to go hand in hand, and we work with about 10 to 12,000 people a year through our program.
And you also advise just a friendly friendly notice from Monique, which is if you're going to volunteer, you may end up running the place. That's what happened to you, didn't it?
Yes, I started as a volunteer. Since this is such a relatively new field, there's really no course of study in wildlife rehabilitation that you can take. You learn by volunteering and training with people who know how.
So many items appear now and then in the headlines about unfortunate, heartbreaking accidents and other incidents involving wildlife being kept as pets. Your thoughts on pet keeping and wildlife?
I never think that it's a good idea. In most cases, it is illegal. All wildlife here in California is protected. We operate under permits from the California Department of Fish and Game and the Fish and Wildlife Service because we handle migratory birds. But most of these things are adorable when they're babies. I have a baby squirrel right now at home that I'm feeding every 3 hours, one of our first babies of the spring that's about to hit us. Mm-hmm. And they're adorable as babies, but when they get to be about a year old, more and more problems arise, and I really think it's unfair to wildlife. They aren't meant to be pets.
I completely agree with you, because as humans, we say, and I completely agree with you, problems do arise. But what we view as a problem is their survival tactic in the wild.
Exactly. I tell people that baby raccoon that is so adorable, when it hits a year old and sexual maturity rears its head, it doesn't want people anymore. It wants another raccoon. Mm-hmm. And they're one of the big reasons that wildlife is illegal here in California to keep as pets.
In the Napa Valley, as we enjoy the wineries, we enjoy the food, we enjoy the craft, and so much more, what type of balance here and in Sonoma and other areas is being kept and established to still have the bounty of the wine, but still have your wildlife in place?
Well, fortunately, there are ways in which they can go hand in hand. I'm working on a program right now where I have a 4-H group of boys that are working on Emerald Star, which is their equivalent of Eagle Scout and Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. They're going to build barn owl boxes for us. I'm going to raise the barn owls, and then I have a winery in Solano County that is interested in putting up the barn owl boxes and taking the owls to keep the rodents out of the vineyards.
So there is a balance that is being struck there.
I think it's really pretty good. Napa is a very environmentally sensitive county in general. People here want to retain open space. They want to keep the quality of life that this area has, And they're very good about their wildlife.
We're visiting right now with Monique Liguori, Executive Director, Education Director of the Sassoon Marsh Natural History Association. And we can learn more by going to your website, which is?
www.sassoonwildlife.org.
When did it all get underway for this, what started as grassroots effort?
As I said, most of this began in the 70s. We were actually incorporated in 1977, so last 2 years ago was our 30th anniversary.
And California's been a leader.
Yes, it was very much a leader. There are other states where they have wildlife centers, but there are not so many. Not every county has a center. And even here, there is a wide range. There are small groups that work. For example, Napa has a small group but does not have a center. We have a center. There's one to the south of us in Walnut Creek that's a very large wildlife center. So it varies quite a bit.
We, you know, have been discussing, you know, what to do if you encounter injured or displaced or stressed wildlife. What messages should we share with the younger members of our society, of our family and friends, when they say, oh, look at the cute chipmunk baby, the baby squirrel, the bird's fallen out of its nest? A little sort of a back pocket toolkit of strategies we can share with them.
The first thing we always try and tell the kids is it's a myth that parent birds won't take their babies back if you touch them. We try and have people return those baby birds to the nest if it's at all possible. And we tell them that it's a little bit like alien abduction when we take their babies. You know, this giant creature scoops up the baby bird and takes it away, generally to the mother bird's great distress.
That is the perfect way to put it. We don't want that to happen.
And they're the pros. We have to feed baby birds at the Wildlife Center every 15 minutes. It's all day long.
Oh my
gosh.
It's
incredibly labor intensive.
Oh, so babies and mommies belong together.
Absolutely.
And in some cases, in nature, they're daddies too.
Yes,
keep
yes.
Keep that in mind. Your website again is?
www.sussunwildlife.org.
S-U-I-S-U-N.
That's correct.
Questions? 866-675-6675. Laura in Michigan would love to speak with you, Monique Liguori. So, Laura, go right ahead. You're on Living Today.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Laura.
Hi. My question is, I live in a suburb of Detroit, and it is very, very densely populated with deer. And there's been a lot of controversy about what to do to get rid of them. And at one point, they were what they call culling, which I had never even heard this. And they had sharpshooters, and they were shooting them. And people went crazy, so they stopped. But the thing that's tricky now is I think they're beautiful, and I enjoy them, but it's dangerous. Because there's too many, and there's car versus deer all the time. And to date, I don't think we've had anyone killed, but certainly there's a lot of deer along the side of the road. So what is a way that you can do it without, you know, killing them or keeping them from having more babies? What's the solution other than that?
As far as I know, there are no really effective birth control programs. They could always try feeding with birth control in it, but it's really not easily done. The problem we've created for ourselves is there are no more top predators on these animals. We live in areas where wolves, in our state we have mountain lion, but in most places these things are not in abundance. It's a big problem down in Florida with the deer down there. And what happens that when the top predators don't take out the weak, the aged, the sick, then you get an overabundance of animals, they run out of food, and they starve. And that's happened in the Everglades. So that's inhumane, though culling sounds. It's probably a better alternative than letting the animals die. And I'm sure that they do try to select the old, the ill, the, you know, the ones, and that's what the predators do.
An echo in a way of what... Example, an echo of what would happen in nature then.
Right.
Exactly.
Not the optimal, but...
Right. In hunting, unfortunately, hunters tend to go for the prime animal with the biggest rack. And in nature, it wouldn't happen that way. The weak, the old. I always say there are no old age homes out in the wild. When you start to miss a step, somebody notices. But it's
vulnerable.
One of those problems we've created that there's really not a good answer for.
Mm-hmm. So really, the answer is... That was the best answer because there's really nothing else you can do.
Sadly, yes.
Let's talk, Monique, for just a moment about, for example, Laura, by the way. You know, we celebrate your awareness and being plugged in and awake to this issue.
Well,
that's important.
It's all a problem just about everywhere. We have very few ecosystems that are in balance anymore, and very few top predators are tolerated. Even here in California, where people are aware they're a mountain lion, when one is spotted, the hue and cry goes up, and everybody just gets very upset. And the best thing that can happen for the mountain lion is to go away quietly. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult, and deer will populate to the extent of the food they have available, and that shifts and things change, and then you have a problem.
Thank you, Laura, for your call and for raising awareness on this issue, which, as you mentioned, in Florida and in other states, is also something that we are wrestling with.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, the situation with mountain lions, what is your organization's approach to that, and do they also need, of course, it goes without saying, protection, but what about rehabilitation and I know it's slightly controversial, repopulation in the wild.
We have not had to rehabilitate and release a mountain lion. We did have a bobcat about 5 years ago come in that was found floating down Puta Creek, which is one of the bodies of water, and had to be rehabbed because there was no way of telling where mom is. We know there are mountain lion in our county, but they're elusive. They're very, very rarely seen. And usually when that comes into play, the Department of Fish and Game becomes involved at that point.
But as you're mentioning, Monique, they are as frightening as they can be for some people. And it's unfortunate have been some attacks.
Yes.
But they are part of the ecosystem.
Yes, they are. And if it's like everything else, you know, we drive our cars every day with no thought to the risk that they pose to us and the number of people that die, which is certainly greatly in excess of mountain lion attacks or deaths, but it's knowing what to do, how to do it, and in general, they're going to avoid you if they can.
First of all, I want to say we celebrate your launching of this grassroots effort, which has become this wonderful organization. What advice would you share with us listening to Living Today here at Martha Stewart Living Radio, Sirius 112 XM 157 here in Napa Valley? Would you share with us, wherever we are listening in our area, that we can begin our own grassroots effort for awareness, for being sensitive to the ecosystem and trying as much as possible to keep as much of it in place?
Well, I always say think globally, give locally. Find your local organizations that are doing this. We are a private nonprofit that operates on a budget of $50,000 a year and serves our entire county. There are many worthy causes, but these local causes need your help, definitely. And be educated about what to do when you find these animals. All organizations are willing to talk with you to tell you what to do if you find a bird or an animal, how to respond to that. And it's always a good idea to know who to call before the problem arises.
Unless there are safety issues, I always find it so heartbreaking when someone sees wildlife, a snake or something like that, can be very disconcerting and say, kill it, kill it.
Yes.
I mean, oh my gosh. I know there's a danger issue involved, but it happened to me one time, and I called the snake expert in my area, and they came and took it away. That goes without saying that we should try to preserve wildlife above everything then.
Well, the lady that works for me, my rehabilitation director who supervises our animals and our volunteers, she lives backed up to open space, and she gets rattlesnakes occasionally in her backyard, so we just got her a pair of tongs so she can pick them up and relocate them. Not everybody's up to that, but unfortunately, as you say, a lot of harmless snakes die in the rush thinking something might be dangerous, so that's a big part of what we try and do is say, okay, this is a rattlesnake, this is a gopher snake, but this is how you avoid that rattlesnake.
Is this where online resources and online components can really empower us to know the difference?
Absolutely. I used to say when the going gets tough, the tough get reference books. And now I say you get on the internet.
And study and learn and research. You mentioned you have non-releasable wild birds and animals. Do many rehabilitation groups have them? And what is the category, the criteria for deciding something is non-releasable?
Many organizations do have them, and we use them in our education programs. We're not allowed to show the public the birds and animals we're rehabilitating to release back to the wild, so we use them as our animal ambassadors. We have a golden eagle, a red-tailed hawk, a great horned owl, an American kestrel, a screech owl, and these are all birds and animals that are non-releasable because of some type of injury. They cannot fly. Our birds have wing injuries that make them non-releasable. I have a blind raccoon, and our coyote that we got from down in Solvang near Santa Barbara, he had been hit by a car as a puppy and lost an eye. So these animals are not able to go back to the wild, but they're something that when the public comes to visit us, they can see native California wildlife. We go to the schools and youth groups with them as well.
And then you mentioned you do have the animals who are on a totally different track, and those are the ones that you are rehabilitating. How do you, just in a nutshell, because we are so fascinated by this, how do you rehabilitate an animal? How do you prepare it for life back in the wild?
Well, one of the best things you do is raise it with its own kind. That's one of the best things. That's how they know they are. You try never to raise singlets if possible. With most things, they're raised in the center. The birds of prey and the songbirds are raised there. We do in-home care with baby mammals like jackrabbits, raccoons, and squirrels. As I mentioned, I do squirrels because I feed every 3 hours around the clock, and I'm not at the center all of that time. Then when they're weaned, they go to the center into outside caging. All stages go toward moving them out into more room and less contact with people.
Your feelings when the release does happen?
It's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. I always have a tough time that night, not because I don't want to let them go, but because I can no longer protect them. Mm-hmm. But that's what we work toward. That's the payoff when you take that golden eagle, or in my case, squirrel, whatever, and put it back where it belongs. That's why we're all doing this.
Say in our own backyard, because you say either at home or in an outings when we usually encounter the situation, Monique, what should we do, say, for example, a baby squirrel?
If you find a baby squirrel, one of the best things you can do is watch and see. Back off for a while and watch and see. If they're small enough and the mother is there, they will take them back up into the tree, into their nest. We actually have little boxes we give people when they bring them in that have holes all through them and wire coil so they can wire it back up in the tree, and the mom will take them back.
What? How long a window should we wait before we think, okay, time to get help?
Absolutely a good question, and that's where it's a good idea to possibly consult a wildlife expert. If it's cold and dark and you haven't seen mom for a number of hours, probably time to do something.
A baby bird.
A baby bird, the best thing you can do, again, is try and get it back in, not if not into the nest, into the bush or tree the nest is built in. They go through a stage where we call them branchers. They're too big to all stay in the nest anymore. They move out on the branches, but they're not quite flying, and mom and dad are still feeding them. Easy time to end up on the ground. But if they're not injured, we don't need to take them in. And sometimes I've had people put them back up there for 2 or 3 days. It's a natural stage, but we have so many hazards now.
Folktale myth, something that perhaps we can discount or confirm right now with Monique Liguri from SusunWildlife.org. If you touch a wild animal, its mother will reject it.
Not so.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up.
Not so, especially in the case of birds. Birds have a lousy sense of smell. Okay. They really don't have much sense of smell at all. And even with mammals, they will take them back. That maternal drive is terribly,
you know,
terribly
we keep
strong.
Hearing that, though.
Yeah.
If you touch it, they reject it.
I don't know why. That's gone on forever. And we work very hard with the young folks to teach them that that is not the case.
I don't find them icky scary. Some people might, and I respect that. Spiders, snakes, creepy crawlies, what should we do?
You know, judicious avoidance might be your best case. If you're really worried, seek some advice. Most things are not dangerous. You don't want a spider bite, but it's not going to kill you.
And now, confirm this for us. Sometimes they're more afraid of us than we are of them.
Almost always.
See, that's the true part,
almost
isn't it?
Always. Mm-hmm. You know, we are giants compared to them.
I like that alien abduction parallel. That's how they see us to them.
Yes.
So the less we intervene with nature, then the message we're getting from Monique, unless there's an injury or distress, let them be with their own kind.
Yes, and if you ever have any doubts, call the people who work in this area, and they'll be happy to advise you.
The executive director and education director of the Sassoon Marsh Natural History Association, Sassoon, S-U-I-S-U-N, wildlife.org. Thank you for painting this beautiful picture of Napa Valley and the surrounding area and the wildlife there, and for giving us insight on how to care for wildlife wherever it is that we leave. Monique, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to let folks know more about this.
We certainly appreciate that.
My pleasure.
This is Martha Stewart Living Radio, Sirius 112 and XM 157.